Welcome to your weekly Constitutional, a radio show where we discuss a subject that affects you every day, the United States Constitution. My name is Stuart Harris, and I teach constitutional law at the Appalachian School of Law in beautiful Grundy, Virginia, and I'm speaking to you today from WETS, FM, and HD in Johnson City, Tennessee. I have a confession to make. No, I have a couple of confessions to make. The first of them is that my favorite section of the newspaper is the obituaries. Now, my teenager, Ben, he makes merciless fun of me for this. He'll come and see me reading the obituary column. He'll say, oh, read about dead people again, huh? You're going to be dead soon too, Dad, you old geezer. Well, maybe. But I've tried to explain to him on several occasions that an obituary is nothing more than a mini biography of some prominent person. And like all biographies, obituaries contain a lot of history. And I happened to be reading my favorite column recently when I came across an obituary of a fellow I'd never heard of before. And I'm a little bit ashamed of that, too. His name was Norman Corwin, and he was a pioneer of early radio. Norman Corwin was, in fact, probably the foremost producer of radio dramas and other interesting radio programs in the 1930s and 1940s. And he was notable because his programs made you think. They were not merely entertainment, though they were very entertaining, but he would pick very serious subjects. And perhaps the top of his career, the apogee of his career, occurred during World War II when he made several famous recordings, one of them at the very end of the European War, and one of them quite near the beginning of the war. And it's that one we're going to talk about today. In December of 1941, he did a very famous radio show called We Hold These Truths. Now, it had nothing to do with World War II, at least not initially. It was, in fact, a very long-planned radio show, planned to coincide with a very famous date in December of 1941, which, here's another confession, I had never heard of either, Bill of Rights Day. I knew that the Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. Every common law professor knows that. But I'd never really thought about the actual date when the last necessary state ratified it, and that date was December the 15th. And I'd never really thought about 1941 being exactly 150 years from 1791, just as 2011 is exactly 220 years after 1791. So we have an anniversary coming up. He planned a show that was going to talk about the importance of the Bill of Rights on its 150th anniversary. He planned it as sort of a time travel show. Jimmy Stewart, a famous actor, was going to visit Washington, D.C. He was going to encounter the Constitution, and he was going to go back and imagine what it was like when the Constitution was ratified and when people called for a Bill of Rights and what was in that Bill of Rights. He imagined this whole show. He had it all set up, ready to go, and then December 7th came and the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. We were at war. Norman didn't know if the show would even go forward as planned, but when he asked his superiors at CBS, are we going to do this show? They said, yes, it's even more important now than before. In fact, not just CBS, but all four major radio networks carried this remarkable show, We Hold These Truths. It was modified. It was modified most notably by adding to its end a speech by Franklin Roosevelt, the President of the United States, who took that opportunity to talk about the importance of the Bill of Rights in a time of war against nations who adopted very different philosophies of government. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. That's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the Bill of Rights. We're going to talk about Bill of Rights Day right around the time of this broadcast on December the 15th, the 220th anniversary of the Bill of Rights. We're going to talk about Norman Corwin, and we're going to hear extended excerpts from his remarkable show, We Hold These Truths.
We Hold These Truths.
This is a program about the making of a promise and the keeping of a promise. This is a program about the rights of people. This is a program coming to you over the combined radio networks of the United States, bringing you the voices of Americans, bringing you the voice of the President of the United States. This is a program for listeners in all zones of continental time, for listeners on ships away from home, for listeners in uniform, for listeners on the American islands in the two great oceans. This is a program about the guarantee made to the people of America 150 years ago. A guarantee that has been kept through peace and war and peace and war. A guarantee we call the Bill of Rights.
My name is Barrymore. I'm one of several actors gathered in a studio in California near shores that face an enemy across an ocean now Pacific in name only. We are here tonight to join 130 million fellow Americans in praise of a document that men have fought for, that men are fighting for, that men will keep on fighting for as long as freedom is a strong word falling sweet upon the ear. What we enact here tonight has been enacted many times before in living flesh and blood. The people we portray have walked the world. The drama is an ancient one, the endless one, the struggle for men's rights to live their lives out peacefully and profitably in a decent world. It may be many of us people here are known to many of you people there, for with us, honored to have a part in this program of commemoration, are some whose names you may have heard, such names as Edward Arnold, Walter Brennan, Bob Burns, Norman Corwin, Bernard Herrmann, Walter Houston, Marjorie Maine, Edward G. Robinson, Corporal James Stewart, loaned to us for this occasion by the Army Air Corps, Rudy Vallee, and Orson Welles. In New York City, waiting to join us, is Dr. Leopold Stokowski and the Symphony Orchestra. In Washington, the highest name in the land, the President of the United States, Commander-in-Chief of the Army and the Navy, Mr. Roosevelt. But this is not a night of names, of personalities. Our names or any names are meaningless unless your names are added. Unless you join us. You, for whom the sacred rights were written and to whom their keeping is entrusted. You, the guardians of what has been bequeathed to you by millions like yourselves and by the toil of centuries as dark and menacing as this we live in. You, the people of the Federated States.
"150 years is not long in the reckoning of a hill, but to a man it's long enough. "150 years is a weekend to the redwood tree, but to a man it's two full lifetimes. 150 years is a twinkle to a star, but to a man, it's time enough to teach 6 generations what the meaning is of liberty, how to use it, when to fight for it."
Have you ever been to Washington, your capital? Been there lately? Well, let me tell you, it's a place of buildings and of boom and bustle, of the fever of emergency, of workers working overtime, of windows lighted late into the night. It's a handsome city, proud of its sturdy name, proud of the men who stopped there and made decisions, proud of its domes and lawns and monuments. Of course, Washington is like Some other cities you've seen has streetcars, haberdasheries, newsstands, coffee shops, and slums. At busy intersections, there are neon traffic signs which, when the light's against you, say, "Don't walk." And when the light changes, "Walk." It's a tourist city, which is proper when you think how much of history a busy guide can cover in a day. And when you realize that the District of Columbia belongs to all the people of the states. The tourists know that here their voices have been heard from clear back home. That here their votes are put to work. The tourists go to see the sights they've seen in a thousand pictures of. Sights so famous and familiar that they're thrilled to find they look, well, they look just like they thought they'd look. Washington Monument, for example, or the Lincoln Memorial, where the seated and relaxed Abe Lincoln sits between two mighty murals of plain words, his own words.
With firmness in the right, as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in. Do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations.
The city moves on busily outside the monument. The tourist goes to see the Capitol, the White House, the museums, sees all about him statues and inscriptions and more sayings than he's ever seen in his life before. They're wise sayings, profound sayings. At Union Station, for example.
A man must carry knowledge with him if he would bring home knowledge. Samuel Johnson.
The Archives Building.
What is past is prologue.
The Supreme Court.
Justice, the guardian of liberty.
But one of the best is in the Library of Congress.
The noblest motive is the public good. Virgil.
Ah, the tourist thinks that over.
The noblest motive is the public good.
And with this in mind, he climbs the marble stairs inside the library to come at length upon a case containing a handwritten document.
Engrossed original of the Constitution of the United States of America.
He sees that the manuscript is aging, that its words are worn as though from use. The writing's dim. Hard to make it out. It's getting on in years.
I hate to interrupt Jimmy Stewart, but I have to point out just one or two things. First of all, the Constitution is actually quite easy to read. It's still very legible. In fact, we just recently did a show with the people over at the National Archives who preserve and protect that document. And in contrast to the Declaration of Independence, which is badly deteriorated, the Constitution has been very well preserved. So I think maybe Norman Corwin was going on a little bit much for dramatic effect there about how old and decrepit the document looks. Second, secondly, although it was true in 1941 that the Constitution was displayed at the Library of Congress, that changed very soon thereafter. In the early 1950s, it was moved under armed guard, under an army escort, down Constitution Avenue to where it currently sits with the other charters of freedom in the rotunda of the National Archives. But that's just quibbling. Let's get on with We Hold These Truths.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Article 1, Section 1. All legislative...
The words are dim, but not the meaning of the words. The pens that put this down are dust, but not the marks they made. There was a time when this was shining parchment, when the text was easier to read, when the ink was not yet dry. Suppose that we stopped here in modern Washington before this shrine, were to return, go back a little north by east in time and space, to one bright afternoon in Philadelphia, that fine fall day when deputies from 12 free states subscribed their names to a new blueprint of a new society.
1787, and of the independence of the United States, the 12th, in witness whereof we have hereunto subscribed our names, George Washington, President, and Deputy from Virginia.
Now, gentlemen, we are ready for your signatures by geographical progression north to south. The deputies from New Hampshire will pre-sign first. John Langdon.
John Langdon.
Nicholas Gilman.
Nicholas Gilman.
The delegates from Massachusetts.
Good-looking men, these are mostly lawyers. Two or three of them sergeants.
Rufus King.
The gentleman from Connecticut, please. William Samuel.
Broom, there. Broom of Delaware. He did surveying for a while.
Roger Sherman.
And now our representative of
Sherman, who just signed.
Alexander,
he was a shoemaker before he studied
Alexander
law.
Hamilton. The gentleman from New Jersey. William.
That's Washington calling the delegation.
David Brearley.
David Brearley.
The gentleman from.
The man behind Ben Franklin is Alexander Hamilton. Ben's getting old now. 81. Hey, he slept off and on throughout the whole convention. But when it was important to be awake, he was awake,
Charles,
all right, and active.
Charles Coatsworth Pinckney.
Charles Coatsworth Pinckney.
The gentleman.
Ah, there have been men assembled in a room before.
William?
But never to a greater purpose.
Now, gentlemen, the others.
Well.
Abraham Baldwin.
Here comes the last to sign now. Yes,
William Jackson, secretary.
Well, now I finest thing to
do. So, the Constitution has been drafted, signed, and presently will be submitted to the states for their approval. Now, the convention's all relaxed now. There are handshakes, felicitations.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional, where we are having an homage to radio pioneer Norman Corwin, and we're listening to excerpts from his groundbreaking and historic broadcast right after Pearl Harbor of We Hold These Truths, a tribute on the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights. Now, again, I hate to break in on such a wonderful broadcast, but I have to point out a couple of things. Just the last part we heard, he had a very dramatic recounting of a signing ceremony where all the people who wrote the Constitution got together and signed it and slapped each other on the back and smiles all around. Well, it didn't actually happen that way. The Constitution was voted on in September of 1787, but then they actually had to have it printed up. They actually had to have it written up in final form, and then the signing actually took place over the next several weeks. So it wasn't quite as dramatic as Norman portrayed it. A couple other things. He mentioned that it was mostly lawyers at the Constitutional Convention, and then he emphasized that there were other people there, shoemakers and tradesmen of other sorts. That's a fairly common preference. People like to mention the common background of lots of people at the Constitutional Convention, or for that matter, at the Second Continental Congress, which adopted the Declaration of Independence. But the truth is that it was lawyers who took the lead on this, as perhaps is appropriate. I mean, James Madison, all the other, Alexander Hamilton, these were men who were learned in the law. Even people like Benjamin Franklin, who weren't technically lawyers, they were people who were very learned, and they took the lead on this. And even the shoemaker that Norman Corwin mentioned, Roger Sherman, he later became a lawyer. So let's give credit where credit is due. I know people aren't that comfortable with lawyers, but they really did make the major contribution at the Constitutional Convention. He also mentioned Alexander Hamilton, who's often overlooked in these discussions. Interesting thing about Alexander Hamilton is he did sign. I've seen his signature, but he probably shouldn't have, because you see, his state delegation from New York at the convention, they never actually voted in favor of the Constitution. There were three of them. Alexander voted in favor of it, but he was actually in the minority. But hey, that never stopped somebody like Alexander Hamilton, so he did sign. After the break, we'll have our constitutional quiz, and then more from We Hold These Truths by Norman Corwin.
God bless America. Oceans, white with fog.
And now our favorite part of our show, our constitutional quiz. And with me, as always, is our quiz lady, Kelly Carmichael, from the Center for the Constitution at James Madison's Montpelier. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, Stuart. Always a pleasure to be here. I love who's our victim today. I just get excited every week for this.
He's ready for you. I'll let our victim introduce herself.
Hi, Kelly. My name's Samantha Lissel-Sarsik. I'm from south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Hi, Samantha.
I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce the last name, but Samantha, it will be where are you from again?
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Tremendous. Do you have a difficult question for Samantha today, Kelly?
Preferably an easy one.
Or an easy one. You pick.
An easy one. We'll see. All right. Well, Samantha, are you a fan of the Bill of Rights?
Slightly.
Slightly? Uh-oh. Okay. Well, it is a question about the Bill of Rights. I asked that question to another person one time, and they were enthusiastic and ready to go, and they got the answer correct. So I have confidence in you today. All right. Here's the question. The United States Bill of Rights specifically protects all of the following except the right to. So protects all of the following of the list I'm going to give you except for one of these. Was it A, an education, B, legal counsel, C, due process, or D, free speech?
I'm going to have to go with A, education.
You're answering too quickly. I have a little song I wish to sing.
Okay.
It's just like Sesame Street. One of these is not like the other. One of these things just doesn't belong, right? Okay.
I know that song.
It's always a good day when Sesame Street is on the radio.
It's always a good day, and when I have an excuse to sing the song. So we're looking for the one that doesn't fit in the Bill of Rights, and you had jumped right to choice A. You say an education?
Correct.
Well, let's go through the other answer choices, if we could, please, Kelly, and Samantha can tell us why she isn't choosing them.
Okay. Well, you said education's not in there. Why do you say that?
Well, I'm pretty familiar with the Bill of Rights, and education's the only one that's sticking out that is not coming to mind in the first 10, so.
Several founders, notably Jefferson, I think, and Franklin, talked about the importance of education in a democracy. And so it's a very important concept, so it'll be interesting to see whether that's the right answer. What are the other answer choices, Kelly?
Sure. B was legal counsel.
You think that's in the Bill of Rights?
Absolutely.
Okay. What about C, due process?
That's right. C was due process.
Mm-hmm. You think that's in there?
Yes.
Okay. And what was the last one, Kelly?
Free speech.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that one's definitely in there. Oh, Kelly, she seems certain, and we can't shake her from her conviction. So is A the correct answer choice?
Well, I'm happy to say that, you know, the Bill of Rights, if I say something absolutely crazy, I at least have the right to a lawyer. So congratulations, A, education is not in the Bill of Rights.
Awesome.
Congratulations, and I apologize for my ringing cell phone. I always call out my students when they're in class and their cell phones start ringing, but I guess that's my privilege, is to have my cell phone ringing while we're on the radio. Okay, but thank you very much, Samantha, and congratulations. You've gotten your T-shirt that you've earned, and so now you can go out and be attractive to all the young men out there.
Awesome. Sounds great.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional, and our show today is a tribute. It's a tribute first and foremost to the Bill of Rights, which are almost exactly 220 years old this month, in December of 2011. And we're also doing a tribute to a radio pioneer named Norman Corwin, who did a remarkable show back in 1941, the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights, called We Hold These Truths. Now, so far, we've had some time travel. Jimmy Stewart, the lead actor in Norman Corwin's production, has gone back in time, and he's talking about the ratification process. And what he notes at this point, what Norman Corwin notes at this point, is that ratification was not easy. In fact, there was really significant opposition to the original 7 Articles of the Constitution. Some of it was just purely politics, people being selfish. But some of it was very principled, and it was based mostly on the absence in the original Constitution of a Bill of Rights.
No. There will be no speeches. There will be no celebration. No confetti from the windows. Fireworks saluting cannon. Roses strewn beneath the coaches of the delegates. Instead, suspicion. Suspicion by the very men who fought the long fight so that there could be a constitution drawn for the emancipated states. The farmers and the clerks and the hackmen and the artisans and the grease-grimed blacksmiths in their shops. These men who only lately put away their guns and powder in a good dry place. These men who won a war of freedom, but who know that freedom must be guarded to be kept. And they're suspicious. And they're talking in the common, in the tavern, and in the parlor, and in the foundry room.
Mm-hmm. All right, what else does it say?
Well, that covers it. That's the whole thing.
Constitution. I don't like it.
Why?
Come here with me. Come over at the door. See that spire?
Yes.
That's the church I go to.
Well, what about it?
I like it. I'm a God-fearing man. I want to keep on going there.
Well?
Don't want anybody telling me I have to pray his way.
Well, who'd think of doing that?
It's been done. Happened often. You ever hear of state religion?
Yes.
Bad. I don't like it. Don't think we should have it.
Well, we haven't got it.
Nothing in that thing you read me guarantees we won't get it.
Say, this here Constitution gives us order and authority, huh?
Yeah.
But we had order and authority under King George before the Revolution. Shucks, the Romans had order and authority under Nero, too. Only the wrong kind and too much of it.
Oh, yes, but surely you can trust the men
who... Now, it ain't that I don't trust the men who wrote the Constitution. Oh, sure, I trust them, but them fellers won't always be around.
Oh, yeah, well, you don't seem to understand. This is our own authority. Now, if you...
Fact that it's our own don't make no difference. Constitution fine as far as it goes. But the time to talk authority is after you put it down in black and white that we're all free men. Then we'll give you all the authority you need to keep us that way. What's more, we'll back it up with guns. That's fair enough.
Well, the way you talk, you'd think that...
The way I talk? I think it all depends on who's handing out authority. Whether it's to keep men slaves or keep them free.
Didn't think it was necessary. The English thought it was necessary 100 years ago. They've got a Bill of Rights. Where's ours?
Well, maybe they'll get around to that. Maybe they'll amend the Constitution later.
How do we know they will?
Well, maybe they're planning some...
I don't like this maybe business. When my husband Robert got killed at Trenton, there was no maybe about it. He got killed. He knew what he was fighting for, and he was glad to die for it. Now the fighting's over. I want to see it.
I don't know, Jerry. Sometimes I wonder whether you use your head for anything else than to keep your ears apart.
I got my opinion, and I stick to it. The Constitution looks good to me. I don't think it needs no adding to.
Hand me that brick there.
It's a foundation, that's what it is.
Sure, it's a foundation. That's just what I'm talking about. But do you build a foundation and then go away and not build a house? Do you clear the woods and then let the ground go barren?
Ah, piffle.
Ah, the way you argue. Piffle, eh? Is that all you can say? Hand me that brick there.
What's the hurry? Give them time. It's not an easy job to get a new country running right.
That's just the point. It's a lot easier to get it running wrong.
Rights, 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 man! Can't you get that through your head? Why shouldn't rights be written into the Constitution just as much as rules on how to meet and when to vote and how much a senator should get paid?
Not they alone. Not only little men like they whose names escape us, whose names will never be recalled. The men who left their bloody footprints in the snows of Pennsylvania and buried their comrades in a clearing back of a clump of evergreens. The little men who took it, gave it, stuck for the duration, saw it through. Not they alone are doubters, wondering and grumbling, no. There are big names, too. Names now bandied on the tongue, but later to be lustrous. Later to be sainted. Tom Jefferson, George Mason, Jimmy Madison, Pat Henry. Now, take Jefferson, for instance. You know what he says?
Bill of Rights is what the people are entitled to against any government on earth.
I'll take Pat Henry.
I cannot give my oath to support this Constitution without a Bill of Rights.
Now, take Mason. A wealthy planter of Virginia who'd rather plant a seed of liberty than 20,000 acres of tobacco.
Government to be lasting must be founded in the confidence and affections of the people. Without a Bill of Rights, this government will end either in monarchy or a tyrannical aristocracy. This Constitution has been formed without the knowledge of the people, and it is not proper to say to them, take this or nothing.
Well, then, the Constitution is in peril. This document, so handsomely engrossed in Philadelphia, there are doubts about it and suspicions. Will the states approve of it? Approve by ratifying? Will they throw it out? Or will they ratify providing certain changes will be made? The states decide. Not one man, two men, three men, but the states united. They decide. What says South Carolina?
We ratify, but offer four amendments.
What says Massachusetts, where she stands?
We ratify, but offer nine amendments.
New Hampshire, you?
We ratify, but propose 12 amendments.
Rhode Island?
We ratify, but 21 amendments, please.
North Carolina?
26 amendments and the Declaration of Men's Rights.
Virginia?
We ratify, but we're suggesting 29 amendments and a Bill of Rights.
New York?
33 amendments in full faith and credit, and we ratify.
Now, Congress may begin. May call itself First Congress. May go to work. May tackle the new job of running a democracy. But it has one thing to remember. A promise is a promise. The people have been promised changes, promised amendments, promised that their freedoms should be written down in black and white for all to see, for all to know, for all to live and prosper by. They sit down in a drafty hall in New York City and to go to work. At first, they're busy with 100 other things, but Madison, he keeps after them. He's a stickler for this Bill of Rights. Madison remembers what the people want. And by this time, carpenters are making changes in the Federal Hall, adding more room. Now, the place has got to be enlarged. The government's growing, you know. And the representatives, all 55 of them, they work through the noise. They're making some additions of their own. They're working on the Bill of Rights.
The Congress wrote a 10-part epic of amendments.
Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law regarding an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Radburn.
I move this amendment be accepted in its present form without qualification.
These are the voices of Virginians. We are debating Congress's amendment on this mild December afternoon, this 15th of December, 1791, debating in the State Assembly in the capital of Richmond. Only one more state is needed now to ratify. Just one more state and the amendment becomes law. The victory is close at hand. Virginia likes these articles. Virginia, the home of Washington and Jefferson, of Madison and Mason. Virginia has fought to win these rights for many years, has waited for this day. This is December the 15th, 1791. Virginia will ratify the Bill of Rights today, and freedom will take hold, take root, begin to burgeon in the rich earth of America. Today, the 15th of December.
Thank you.
Now the people of the states breathe easier. It's all down in black and white. A contract. It's a deal between the future and themselves. Americans don't make a promise lightly, or take it that way either. A promise made by honest men to other honest men is like a hand clasp and a vow. Meant to be understood. Meant to be remembered. Ah, look about the country now. Suspicion thaws like frost beneath the frank diplomacy of spring. The people read the new amendment slowly, pleasurefully, as they'd read a letter from a son just set up in business who'd written home to tell how he was making good.
Oh, well, now that's more like it. Yes, sir, that's more like it.
Got your sleeve in the soup, dear. What's more like what?
Listen to this. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
That mean you can keep your gun?
That means if somebody gets into office and turns sour on the people that put him there, why, he can't vex us with a standing army the way George did before the war. No, sir, we people of the states, if we got arms, nobody's going to order us to do things the majority of the country ain't voted for. Not without a fight.
Better eat that soup before it gets cold. Shouldn't read when you eat anyways. Put down the paper.
Oh, all right.
That's a good law, ain't it, Jasper?
Yep.
Go on reading it. Why'd you stop?
Well, how can you hear me when you're hammering?
Concentration. Go on.
Amendment 3. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law.
Gives me elbow grease just hearing things like that. Makes the old hammer handle easier.
The way this sounds, you'd think we was expecting another war. In a time of war, this says. Why, I thought we'd just been all through that a little while ago.
Why, the more these amendments make us free, the more they'll be hated by those who don't want freedom because it spoils their game. Think nobody's going to try and break us up because we're united and agreed? Some people are just ornery that way. Wouldn't surprise me none if we had to fight more wars.
Why, you mean to say we're maybe going to have to fight all over again to keep our independence? Well, I hope it don't get to be a habit.
I hope it does. Pretty good habit to get into, fighting for your rights. Always somebody waiting for a chance to steal valuables. And if freedom ain't a valuable, I don't know what is.
Yeah, well.
Go on, read some more.
Amendment 4. The rights of the people to be secure in their persons, homes, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath and affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seen.
You're listening to your weekly constitutional, a tribute to the Bill of Rights, which is 220 years old in 2011, and to Norman Corwin, who did this remarkable show that we've been listening to parts of. After the break, we'll come back and hear the conclusion of We Hold These Truths.
Wenn der Führer says, wie ist der Master Race? Wie heil, heil, right in the Führer's face. Not to love the Führer is a great disgrace. So wie heil, heil, right in the Führer's face. Wenn Herr Goebbels says, we own the world and space, we heil, heil, right in Herr Goebbels' face. Wenn Herr Goering says, they'll never bomb this place, we heil, heil, right in Herr Goering's face.
This is Stuart Harris, and I'm playing for you today some excerpts from Norman Corwin's We Hold These Truths, a program to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the Bill of Rights in 1941. We've gotten halfway through the Bill of Rights now. Let's pick up with the Fifth Amendment.
Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life and limb. Nor shall he be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Nor shall private property be taken for public use without...
Let's go ahead 150 years from now. Let's rush headlong, unstopping down the corridors of time. Let's go ahead to 1941. The writing dims. The parchment cracks and curls up at the edges. The splotch of time is on it. And now it's in a case in Washington, D.C. It's in a case behind the pane of special glass protecting it from the light. You see that tourist bending over it there? He's trying hard to make out the writing. He's tracing the rights of persons accused of crime.
Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense.
Where does this tourist come from? Oh, maybe from a place undreamed of when the Bill of Rights was born. A land as far away from Federal Hall as Europe. Well, California. What lies tonight between that place and here? 4 dozen states without a yard of fenced-in border. 130 million people. People working, people resting up to work some more. People working in a mighty unison to prosecute a war. All right, now let's move along. Let's move among them. Let's hear them living lives and thinking thoughts and giving off opinions. Let's see now what they have to say 150 winters after Richmond. Let's see what happens to the Bill of Rights through their 33 administrations, 77 Congresses, and a half a dozen wars. Has anybody anything to say about the status of men's rights December 15th, 1941?
I have something to say, if you don't mind. I'm in jail tonight, but I'm joining in your celebration and cheering as hard as anybody else.
Uh-huh. Well, if you don't mind my asking, what...
Well, a trumped-up charge. The old routine in the city. And I'm getting out on bail tomorrow, and when I'm finally tried, it'll be by a jury and in public. And none of this Gestapo stuff. Although they wouldn't try it if they could, but that little 450-word matter you're celebrating tonight stops them short of that.
Yeah, well, what did they chuck you in the clink for? I mean, what the charge?
For making a speech for the fusion party against the mayor. First, we hired a hall, so they took away our permit. Said the building was unsafe under an old fire ordinance. So then we went down to Garrison Square, where no permit is required to speak in public. And within 10 minutes, we were on our way to the police station on charges of blocking traffic, disturbing the peace, and inciting to riot.
Oh, it's a fine thing.
Yes, but listen, we'll beat him. He's scared of us. You scare the people who find out the truth. And with good reason, because when they do, he's finished. That's why he doesn't want us to be heard.
Uh-huh.
It's only the crooks and the frightened little big shots who need to shut up their opponents. That may work all right in some other countries, but not here.
Yeah, well, how are you going to beat him?
Well, there are such things as rights on our side. And not even the mayor's machine is powerful enough to stop us. We'll fight that fight on every front. Carry it to the highest courts if necessary. And we'll win!
Is this the talk of servile men? Of tamed and gutless and obedient men? Is this the kind of talk you hear from slaves and witless followers? No, not quite. Not exactly. This is what they meant in Federal Hall. And what they voted for 150 years ago today in Richmond. Those 10 amendments are not dusty statutes loafing in retirement. They're a pep talk to the fighters and a fortress to the undefended. They double bar the front door of the home against culprits and searching parties.
stand the drinks for everybody toasting freedom. And of all things, they are not a set of legal clauses, dry and dusty.
Although that Amendment 7, that makes us wonder.
Amendment 7. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law.
Well, except for that, not like a lawyer's brief at all, but mostly like a kind of a freestyle ode to liberty. 10 verses long.
Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted.
That's treason in most of your sentiment like that today.
Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
Do you notice how many times it says the people? Well, now, can it be because it means the people? Yeah, it can.
Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Powers reserved to the people in the Bill of Rights. How the mighty and the proud have fallen. Why, King John, who threw a fit when barons made him sign the Magna Carta. Barons, mind you, were heedless of the common people. John, the tough old monarch. Well, he would have died 1,000 deaths of apoplexy at the mention of the thought of it. The pharaohs of old Egypt, masters of the blackest arts of slavery, they would have crawled inside a pyramid and shut 147 secret doors behind them in a panic.
A promise is a promise. Has America's been kept? Has it come through peace and war, and peace and war untarnished and unbroken? Has it worked, and is it working? For the people and by the people? Is it going anywhere from here? Are the rights the right rights? Are they rolling? Do they function? Do they click? Well, who knows the answer better than the people? Who better can we ask than ask the great custodians themselves, the 100 million keepers of the promise? And we shall ask them. Ask a few of them who stand for many more than few. The high and the low among them.
Ladies and gentlemen, an office clerk.
Well, we know what freedom is now. Looked for a while there like a lot of us had forgot what it really meant and how much we had of it. But the news that kept piling in from the four corners of the earth, that reminded us all right.
Ladies and gentlemen, an editor.
There have been attacks on the freedom of the press and strangleholds of various sorts, but they've been broken every time. And today a man is free to start a paper, run it as he pleases, differ from the next man, all he wants. That would make it seem to me, for one, that our rights have come down undamaged.
Ladies and gentlemen, a worshiper.
I go to the church of my choice. When I don't wish to go, I don't go.
Ladies and gentlemen, an auto worker.
We got the right to organize. We got the right to bargain collectively. Those are good rights, and we're proud of them. We're better workers on account of them.
Ladies and gentlemen, a manufacturer.
There is nothing in any law which forbids us to forget class differences and work together to strengthen the sinews of our country.
Ladies and gentlemen, an okie.
I got a right, if I'm hungry and out of work, which I has been, to go looking for work anywhere in my country. The big court says nobody can't stop me from looking. Dang it, that's my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, a mother.
I might be afraid to bring a child into the world, but not to bring a citizen into the population of the United States.
Yes. And from men beneath the rocking spars of fishing boats in Gloucester, from the vast tenancy of busy cities, roaring with the million mingled sounds of work, from towns spread thinly through the Appalachians, from the assembly lines, the forges spitting flame, the night shifts in the mines, the great flat counties of the prairie states, from the grocers, from the salesmen, from the tugboat pilots and the motor makers, affirmation! Yes! United proudly in a solemn day, knit more strongly than we were 150 years ago this day. Can it be progress if our Bill of Rights is stronger now
than when it was conceived? Is that not what you would call wearing well? The incubation of invincibility? Is not our Bill of Rights more cherished now than ever? The blood more zealous to preserve it whole? Americans shall answer, for they alone may know the answer. The people of America, from the east, from west, from north, from south.
Wasn't that great? That was Norman Corwin's original program, but now let's hear what was added to the end of the program in response to Pearl Harbor. Now remember, Pearl Harbor on December 7th. On December 11th, Germany declares war on us, and probably Franklin Roosevelt listened on the shortwave radio as Hitler declared war on the United States. And now on December the 15th, again, over the radio, perhaps listened to by Hitler, Roosevelt responds.
Free Americans, no date in the long history of freedom means more to liberty-loving men in all liberty-loving countries than the 15th day of December, 1791. On that day, 150 years ago, a new nation, through an elected Congress, adopted a Declaration of Human Rights which has influenced the thinking of all mankind from one end of the world to the other. There is not a single republic of this hemisphere which has not adopted in its fundamental law basic principles of freedom of man and freedom of mind enacted in the American Bill of Rights. There is not a country, large or small, on this continent and in this world which has not felt the influence of that document, directly or indirectly. Indeed, prior to the year 1933, the essential validity of the American Bill of Rights was accepted everywhere, at least in principle. Even today, with the exception of Germany, Italy, and Japan, the peoples of the whole world, in all probability 4/5 of them, support its principles, its teachings, and its glorious results. But in the year 1933, there came to power in Germany a political clique which did not accept the declarations of the American Bill of Human Rights as valid. A small clique of ambitious and unscrupulous politicians whose announced and admitted platform was precisely the destruction of the rights that instrument declared. Indeed, the entire program and goal of these political and moral tigers was nothing more than the overthrow throughout the earth of the great revolution of human liberty, of which our American Bill of Rights is the mother charter. The truths which were self-evident to Thomas Jefferson were to these men hateful. The rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which seemed to the founders of the Republic and which seemed to us inalienable, were to Hitler and his fellows empty words, which they proposed to cancel forever. The propositions they advanced to take the place of Jefferson's inalienable rights were these: that the individual human being has no rights, whatever, that the individual human being has no right to a soul of his own, or a mind of his own, or a tongue of his own, or a trade of his own, that his only duty is the duty of obedience, not to his God, not to his conscience, but to Adolf Hitler, and that his only value is his value not as a man, but as a unit of the Nazi state. The issue of our time, the issue of the war in which we are engaged, is the issue forced upon the decent, self-respecting peoples of the earth by the aggressive dogmas of this attempted revival of barbarism. This proposed return to tyranny, this effort to impose again upon the peoples of the world doctrines of absolute obedience, of dictatorial rule, of the suppression of truth, of the oppression of conscience, which the free nations of the earth have long ago rejected. What we face is nothing more nor less than an attempt to overthrow and to cancel out the great upsurge of human liberty, of which the American Bill of Rights is the fundamental document, to force the peoples of the earth, and among them the peoples of this continent and this nation, to accept again the absolute authority and despotic rule from which the courage and the resolution and the sacrifices of their ancestors liberated them many, many years ago. It is an attempt which could succeed only if those who have inherited the gift of liberty had lost the manhood to preserve it. But we Americans know that the determination of this generation of our people, our generation, to preserve liberty is as fixed and certain as the determination of that earlier generation of Americans was to win it. We will not, under any threat or in the face of any danger, surrender the guarantees of liberty our forefathers framed for us in our Bill of Rights. We hold with all the passion of our hearts and minds to those commitments of the human spirit. We are solemnly determined that no power or combination of powers of this earth shall shake our hold upon them. We covenant with each other before all the world that having taken up arms in the defense of liberty, we will not lay them down before liberty is once again secure in the world we live in. For that security we pray. For that security we act. Now and evermore.
You tell them, Franklin. How was that for contrasting our Bill of Rights with authoritarian states everywhere? Now, I have to say, for you historians out there, I had to make some cuts all throughout this show, and even in Roosevelt's speech. So if you want to hear the original, please Google Norman Corwin, We Hold These Truths, and you can listen to the whole show yourselves on the internet, including all of Franklin Roosevelt's speech. I think we preserved the flavor, and I think it's time for us to leave. My name is Stuart Harris. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. And remember, it's your Constitution, and you need to learn about it.